Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out
sure
this week. And this is a big week for comic books.
Yes.
But we're going to kick it off with Venom, number 200 from Marvel, written by Donny Cates with Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Ryan Stegman, Kev Walker, Danilo S. Bayruth, Ron Lim, Gugu Villanova, Gerardo Sandoval, and Mark Bagley. This is the end of Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman's run on Venom. They're tying up everything that they wanted to say with Eddie Brock and then kicking it over to the next team to take over. I really like this ending a lot. I thought what they were setting up here was very interesting and very good. And I say this as somebody who came into this run not caring the least little bit about Venom.
Yeah.
Not the least little bit?
Maybe a little bit.
I don't know how to jump in on that, but I do think that this was a great Venom run. Also, fantastic 200th issue. You know, instead of doing a collection of stories, like just tell one huge story, which was great. And also, I'm a sucker for those like covers in the back of the comic. Oh, that's just such a cool thing. And even that little mini comic with the Venom was hysterical. This was a great tight package, as Justin likes to say.
I said that once, and it's haunted me like a symbiote attached to my body for so long. Donny Cates is a meticulous writer, and so we get to sort of touch all of the points here that you would want in a Venom run. We get first off, I love the choice that Eddie Brock has now been aged by all of the his symbiote stuff. Very fun. So he gets to be this sort of guru in a way, and godlike creature. I love the Spider-Man stuff. I thought was great. The way that we got to see two sides of the conversation between Spider-Man and him and the Avengers. Very fun. And like you said, Alex, the way it positions sort of the future of Venom, where we have Flash Thompson sort of out there living his symbiote life. And then we have Eddie's son and the original Venom symbiote as his faithful sort of symbiote crypto out there fighting the good fight. Like, great spots. I really like it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, and I say this with actual affection, but it's legit Batman Beyond, except with Venom, is what they're setting up there at
the end.
That's
exactly what I was thinking as well, yes.
Yeah, but it works. It absolutely works. Like, if this is – it doesn't feel like – it felt like natural narrative arcs to get there versus, oh, this is the place you were heading towards. You were, you know, jumping backwards to make it into this new iteration. Instead – they told the story they wanted to tell with Eddie, and here's where they ended up, and they set it up for this next iteration with Dylan Brock, and I'd be excited to follow his adventures. I love the idea of Eddie as the eye in the sky, like the old Bruce Wayne, giving him the info, giving him the intel on everything, that Dylan doesn't know exactly how to use the suit, but the suit is working with him. It's super fun.
I like the addition of chains, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nice little shout out to
you
Spawn.
You love it. Arm chains, wrist yeah. chains, very heavy. Well, and I agree, because I also like he gets to be sort of, as we learn in this issue, omnipresent, not omnipotent, and sort of a bad dad, like a little busy. So that means Dylan can be on his own trying to figure it out. And then how about, what do you guys feel about the use of Maker, the Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe, as the villain, the seemingly the upcoming villain here?
Well, that seems to me, and this is pure speculation based on having not actually read anything, so I could be entirely wrong, but that seems to me be the thing that Donny Cates has been kind of teasing and been going forward with a little bit, that he's going to reboot the Ultimate Universe, you know, or that there's going to be this twist on rebooting the Ultimate Universe, and it's this bigger event story that they're heading towards. I don't know necessarily that it's a Venom-specific issue thing that's going to happen, but I do think we're going to get, like, Ultimate War a year from now or something like that.
I see. I would be less excited about rebooting the Ultimate Universe and more excited about the Ultimate Universe, which already exists, as we learn in this issue, being this pocket place where villains live, sort of a Madripoor for a multiversal Madripoor.
Pocket, if you will.
A little peekaboo pocket for villainy.
I like that, too, and I also like the idea of having some sort of mission statement about the Ultimate Universe. It's an interesting thing because the Ultimate Universe clearly influenced the MCU, which is the main driver now for Marvel Comics. But if there is some sort of statement about the Ultimate Universe invading the Marvel Universe proper and then being the dick villains that they are, I think that would be kind of fascinating. I don't know. I think we have enough distance now from the Ultimate Universe to make some sort of commentary about it, and I'd be curious to see if that's the way that Donny goes.
It's such a tough needle to thread, though, not to keep talking about it, but, like, we got Miles out. Like, he's in the regular...
He's safe, man. He's safe.
He's safe. He's in our universe. Why are we going back? What else do you want from the Ultimate Universe? If Maker's a villain, I like having him sort of jumping around, but what else do we need from over there?
I don't know. Dick Captain America.
Yeah, like, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I would rather let... if you want to create a new universe, great. But, like, I think we can just let the rest of
it go. I do wonder if we're going to get something almost like Heroes Reborn, except for the Ultimate Universe, where if the idea is Maker writing the Ultimate Universe over the 616 universe, if we're going to get, quote, our Captain America transforming into the Ultimate Captain America and that sort of thing, so that they can have that and show why that doesn't work anymore and then kind of move forward from there.
What's the take, though? Like, the Ultimate Universe is meant to be a commentary on the modern world and updating our heroes to reflect the modern world. Like, what's the take there? There could be one.
Heroism is forever. Excelsior.
Great. Let's definitely bring that guy back, Stanley.
Oh, thank you for specifying. Let's move on to something surprisingly retrograde, opposite from this discussion. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, number one from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Bilquis Evely. This is not what I expected from this, given Tom King. This is almost a very old school... you guys are going to rip on me for even bringing it up, but it really feels very like John Carter... except with Supergirl.
Wait, Alex, why would you do that?
Do you mean John Carter
the modern
Mars?
Star Wars? Yes.
Don't try to just say it to get us from saying it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if we haven't heard this story
take
before,
that away from us.
We went to see an advanced screening of John Carter from Mars, walked out of it, a famous disaster movie, famous absolute failure of a movie, with Taylor Kitsch, right, as in the lead role, poised to become a huge star.
Absolutely.
We walk out and Alex is like...
a pre-battleship Taylor Kitsch.
Wow, what a perfect thing to say to set up what I'm about to say. It's you walking out of that movie saying, that's our Star Wars. That is the modern day Star Wars.
To be fair to myself, that is not what I said. What I said is some kid is going to see this.
No,
and this is
don't
going
you
to be...
try to change it now.
You were the kid. Yeah. You were that
don't
kid.
You try to change it.
I very
it.
Specifically said, this is my Star Wars.
You.
This is the only Star Wars I recognize, including Star Wars, is John Carter Mars. My point being that we get this very retrograde story of Supergirl on an alien planet. She doesn't have any of her powers. It's mostly through the lens of somebody who lives on the alien planet that doesn't know about spaceships or anything like that. So she feels very otherworldly. I enjoyed this story. I'm curious to see what this is saying about Supergirl, because I don't quite know at this point.
I really thought this was a fantastic first issue. They take a big swing, which I appreciate. Let's see Supergirl without her powers, you know, like getting taken down by bow and arrow. Like, this is a cool kind of, like, the art's very different than how we've seen her. The coloring is very different. I think this, as someone who's making a statement with Supergirl, I really appreciated this first issue. Also, I've never given a shit about Crypto more than in this comic. So, like, this was, I thought, like, a really fantastic...
Sorry, Pete, are you talking about cryptocurrency?
No. No, I'm not.
Just checking in if you're, like, getting to buying in on Ethereum.
Thanks for keeping it topical, bro. Way to get in there. Dogecoin, let's fucking get topical, dude. Yeah, I know about things that happen. So, yeah, I just think that it's...
Bitcoin.
Oh, my God. I just think it's one of those things where if you're going to kind of, like, all right, I want to know what your take is. I think this is a great job of, like, starting this in a new direction to kind of see what we're going to kind of get in this. And I think I'm very excited for more. I think they did a great job.
What I love about Tom King's work in general is I feel like he approaches every book with, here's my take. Here's the type of story I'm trying to tell here. It's about X, Y. It's about, like, trauma leading to depression. Or it's about being compromised in your heroism and having to then move forward after that, to give you some examples. Or Batman, Catwoman fucking and one of them going down on the other one. So this comic feels like it's about that time in your life when you're, like, in your early 20s and you're fucking around and you're fucking up, like, you think you're destructible, you're not the person you're going to be, you're not a kid anymore. And to position Supergirl right there, I think, is great character choice. And to write this book that is fun, and he comes at it from such a faraway angle with this sort of other planet. We intro how many pages? Like, half of the book is all preamble before we even see Supergirl. And that feels so right for the tone and the topic here. I thought this was great. Tom King he's ahead of the audience in every comic he does, and I love that.
Next up, Compass, number one from Image Comics, written by Robert McKenzie and David Walker, art by Justin Greenwood. Pete, what'd you think about this one?
Hang on, I'm still pulling it up here. Oh, okay.
We would say, as upstate New Yorkers, we would say Compass.
Yeah, Compass. Really love this. The art's fantastic. We got a very kind of cool hero that we don't kind of know a lot about, and interesting kind of, like, villain that's one step ahead of her there. I think this is the art's kind of really leaning the way, but I'm very intrigued by the main characters you're not usually are.
A couple of notes about this one. First of all, this is Greg Rucka Presents. And as we know, Greg Rucka has a habit of creating and pushing very badass female characters. Here we get somebody who seems to be, I don't know, crusade times, would you say? Is that fair? She's going on an adventure there. Somebody's trying to track her down. She ends up in what I believe is probably Gaul, potentially, or maybe Ireland. Well, not 100% sure. But it's definitely a globe-spanning adventure there. It's not anything like the Old Guard, but it definitely felt in line with what he was doing there, albeit with different creators in this case. And I agree with you, Pete. I thought the action was good. I thought this is a fun adventure. I like this quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know why I thought of Headlopper when I was reading this, but I did. I think it's maybe just the panels and the pacing of this story, the way, because the art's not similar to it, but that's what first jumped into my head. And I really enjoyed, like, I love sort of the near silent, 10 page action sequence that kicks it off. Mm-hmm. Like, very fun book.
Good stuff. Next up, Static, Season 1, Number 1 from DC Comics, written by Vita Ayala, art by Chris Cross. This is rebooting, kind of, and kicking off the Milestone universe once again, so it's a very big deal. Pete, were you a fan of Static Shock? And if so, what did you think about this book?
Yeah, definitely. I thought this was a great first issue. Really loved the art. Loved the brightness and the action. Really thought it was great fight stuff. I'm very interested to see how this moves forward. But I felt like the different art style was what stuck out to me the most. I really thought it was does a great job of kind of creating this world that kind of where Static is. So yeah, I think it's a fantastic first issue that does a good job of getting you pumped for more.
Static Shock is the Spider-Man of the DC universe. Let's just do it. Let's do that all day and keep it going. And this book really, I think, sets that stage and plays it out.
Yeah, it treats it seriously. The art is great. As you mentioned, it's Chris Cross, so it's always good. But yeah, very solid first issue. Next up, Save Yourself, Number 1 from Boombox, written by Bones Leopard, which is an amazing name. Art by Bones. Kelly. Bones Leopard. Art by Kelly and Nichole Matthews. This is a take on what if magical girls like Sailor Moon or something like that or whatever were evil and ate people, essentially, is the idea of the book. Some of them are not quite evil, but a regular girl gets involved in them. I enjoyed this. I had a fun time reading this, and I liked all the twists and turns, and I'm definitely on board for issue 2. What did you guys think?
I love the art style, like all the like bright pinks, bright yellows, like purples. Everything's just popping all the time. The story really kept me guessing. We have our main character falling in with the quote unquote villains. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of like big superhero action, or Sailor Moon action even. But at the same time, there's sort of that awkward, like, hey, I'm not actually supposed to be at this party, but I'm at this party. So should I just be here? Or, like, what do we do? We're going to a spaceship?
It's kind of had like Scott Pilgrim feel to it a little bit. Mm-hmm. I really love the 8-bit kind of gamer start that it has. I agree with Justin. Love the bright colors. Also, this cool thing of, like, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? Which is very interesting. And then this kind of like a succubus kind of like power thing where they're stealing humans' energy. So I think very intriguing, fantastic art, great kind of setup of this world. Very easy to relate to the main character. Push me down once, shame on you, but the second person she should have just leveled. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just keep getting knocked around. You know what I mean? Eventually you got to really start throwing bows or something.
Throwing elbows. What?
Elbows.
Elbows.
Elbows. Oh, okay.
Bows is short for elbows. Or did you mean like little bows that you put in your pretty hair?
Mm.
Is that
next up, here's one that we all agree on. Planet Size X-Men, Number 1 from Marvel Comics, written by Jerry Dugan, art by Pepe Larraz. So in this issue, we are getting the event that has been teased in the other Hellfire Gala issues. We've seen that Emma Frost is showing everybody some fireworks. There's a big show, but we didn't know what it was until right now. It turns out, using cooperation from multiple mutants, but led by Magneto. Why did I say
whoa.
It like that?
Who are you? What? That get out of here, new.
That was weird. Yeah, this is the first comic I've ever read.
Yeah.
Magneto? Okay.
What happened?
That
was a weird brain thing. Magneto, he has taken a Rocco and turned it into a planet, essentially. Like, the title is legit exactly what happens here, where a Rocco has been moved to Mars. They've terraformed Mars, and they've turned it into the first mutant planet. Pete, you have to be thrilled that the islands aren't fucking anymore. That's literally the only thing you've talked about with these X-Men books, which have a lot of other things going for them, but all you've talked about is the islands fucking. The islands are no longer fucking. Now one of them is on a planet and one of them is on Earth.
Now they're going to have a long, long-distance relationship, which is like, it's hard. It's hard to make that work.
What are you wearing?
This started,
plants? You got plants?
All right, so first off, plants.
Wait, are you out with that other island? Are you out with the Wahoo right now?
First off, the Doug is an amazing writer. I don't like to attack the Doug. Has a long history of amazing stuff that I very much enjoy.
So why don't you just enjoy this for a change?
I can't, okay? It starts off with this whole thing about like, oh, yeah, planet-sized issue because we're turning the island to the planet. You see what
yes,
we're doing
which I
here?
Liked.
Do you
I
see
also
this?
Like that.
Oh, my God. So smart. I can't. I can't. I don't know what's happening, and I hope.
So wait. So what you don't like about this is that you don't know what the story is, or you don't like the scale.
I
is
don't
too large.
Know who these characters are, who I've grown up with. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what their motivation is.
Okay,
there's a
so
dude
the guy,
who gives birth
first of
to
all,
a
hold on. No, no, no. Let me just say, I'm trying to help you here, Pete.
No,
the guy with
let
the helmet
me continue my
dressed. The guy with the helmet
no,
dressed all
no,
in white is
no,
Magneto.
No,
that's
no.
Magneto. You know him.
No.
His name is pronounced Magneto.
Some asshole then gives birth to a sword that becomes the Sword Space Station. Go fuck yourself. What is happening in this comic?
That's Jamie Braddock's Jamie? Is it Jamie Braddock?
James.
James Braddock? Yeah, it's Brian Braddock's brother. It's Captain Britain's brother. He creates things with his mind, and he gives birth to a space station.
I mean, I just can't even stand how calmly Captain America was just like, hey, you know, hey, just busting your balls, making you come back to the X-Men and Cyclops, you fucking piece of shit. Hey, you know, guess what? I'll go to the gala now. I wasn't going to, but you psychopaths are doing something that I don't understand, so I'm going to get to the
feels like not exactly the dialogue from the comic, but go ahead, Justin.
Great.
The art's great.
Thank you for your time, Pete. What I want to say about this book is the way the X-Men universe is being used now is like it's a toolbox. All the characters are different. What did you say? What did you mumble?
I said you're a toolbox.
It's like using the characters and like I think this speaks to some of your frustration, Pete. It's not the like down and dirty like four X-Men go and like do something. This is like the X-Men are large scale being used to tell these sort of big stories about like, what if the X-Men built a planet? That was sort of the point of this story. And we got to see how they did that. That's some like imagination that I've never seen in a comic before. So I appreciate it. The fact that we got to and then you feel the tension of like that choice is going to come back and haunt the X-Men. And I think every issue of the X-Men lately is like, we're doing this great thing. It's going to be a problem later, and we don't know how to solve that problem, but we are in this brave new world where we are taking big swings, and I like that. It's different, and I like it.
What this feels like to me is the authority without the authoritarianism. You know, the idea of the authority was literally there in the title, where they're like, fuck you, we're not the Justice League. We're going to do what we want. We're going to police exactly how we want. That's not what the X-Men are doing. They're doing what they want, what they think is best for mutant kind. They're trying to explain it to humanity. But to your point, Justin, it's all this like deck of cards that is so fragile that I can't wait to see how it completely crumbles and falls back on them, because it 100% will.
And what I also like about it is despite the fact that this is big sort of like plugging character, it's in storytelling, we still get fun little moments. Like the Captain America feels like the real Captain America. It's a well crafted version of him. Magneto feels very real. He feels like he is
Magneto. Like, it's Magneto.
I don't think it is. It is Magnet is what you say.
Yeah.
Magnet. Look at these magnets.
How they work.
The Storm feels like Storm. Like
so
everyone,
you guys thought it was
moment.
Cool, the giving birth to the idea? You thought that was awesome? That was just
yeah,
like,
I thought that was great. I love it. More of it.
And that's another thing. Like, we're combining mutants to create these new, like, versions of their power sets is interesting. It's not – we don't have to see Wolverine to show up and be like, you want me to pop my claws? And then he does, and everyone is scared.
Yeah, because that you could follow and understand that story. We got 18 different things all going on at once. Nobody knows what the fuck is going on.
Well,
not
some
anything
of us too.
You know, the crazy thing is, like my wife had recently had a dream where I was Wolverine. It was a very sexual dream, and I was Wolverine. And I won't get into it. Yeah, but like,
that's so weird. My wife also had a dream where I was Wolverine, and it was a sexual dream. Man, I don't remember any of the details though. Pete, I feel like I told you some of the details about my dream. That was my dream. Can you remind me of any of the details I told you?
In your dream, your wife realized that you were a fucking asshole and was like, question what she did wrong in her life that she deserved to be stuck with you. And it was, you know, and then she turned into Wolverine and murdered you and chopped you into little pieces. That's how.
What a planet-sized conversation for this planet-sized X-Men book.
Moving on to Norse mythology, number one from Dark Horse Comics, story and words by Neil Gaiman, our script and layouts by P. Craig Russell. This is telling a story of Norse mythology from back in the day. I like this. That's all.
Interesting.
No, I mean, it feels very Neil Gaiman in terms of like riffs and takes on mythology. It feels like a very different tale of Odin and the rest that we've seen before necessarily,
pool?
But what?
The Loogie Pool?
Yeah, the Loogie Pool.
Yeah.
Well, this is an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's book, Norse Mythology, which was published a couple of years ago. And really, I think you're here for the P. Craig Russell art. The story is great. Nice to see Neil sort of drawn into the first couple of pages.
Oh, you're on a first name basis?
Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Neil. I've interviewed him.
Sure.
Before. Yeah. So, okay. He called me Justin, I'm assuming, in that interview.
Probably did.
Let me check the tape, but I'm pretty sure he said Jorsten.
Oh, my God.
And that's why I changed my name to Jorsten after that interview. The P. Craig Russell art is so fun. It's a storybook, but still with the same, like, just detailed flourishes that P. Craig Russell has been doing since way back in Sandman 50, where they worked together on a great issue called Ramadan.
Yeah, I think the art's unbelievable. A lot of like amazing, cool, picturesque moments. You know, Norse shit is always cold as ice, which kind of bothers me a little bit. But, you know, people get killed left and right and for fucked up reasons. The whole giant standing in a circle thing was a little too much for me. But I thought
love giants. Would you say, Pete, it's as cold as ice?
I would. And yeah, it's creatively really fun, but it's also kind of fucked up. But yeah, the beginning, Neil Gaiman shout out at the poetry thing was hysterical.
Let's move on to a second chance for Jerry Duggan, as we call this section, with Captain America Annual Number 1 from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Marco Castellio. This is the second part of the Infinite Destinies arc, where we're finding out who the bearers of the Infinity Stones are. Pete, what did you think about this one?
All right, so this is a little bit more what I'm used to, but first off, like, art, absolutely fantastic. Love the paneling. A lot of great action. Very kind of, you know, cool, like the way they've kind of focused on that that stroller kind of flying through the air and while other stuff is going on. Yeah, I really thought the paneling with the stopping the bullets and the motion and then the stop motion was very well done. But a lot of fantastic action. Love the kind of Black Widow, Captain America team up stuff. Makes me very excited for the movie coming out. Just kind of classic.
Which fun movie specifically? The Green Knight?
No, Black Widow.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I thought this was fantastic. A lot of fun.
Boss Baby, back in business.
Great, great art and storytelling.
I like this a lot, too. What I like about this sort of annual crossover is it's using the Infinity Stones in a way that doesn't feel like we know that they're inevitably going to come together and be a whole Thanos-themed thing. Mm-hmm. It feels like this type of story could really go anywhere, and we're meeting these new characters. This guy's is overtime, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he seems like this issue sort of poses the question, like, if a criminal can travel through time and undo his crime, does he still have to pay for it? And that's an interesting idea, and something that's really just sort of a theme that's just laid over this story in a way that I thought was really smart.
I liked it as well. Next up, Home number 3 from Image Comics, written by Julio Enta, art by Anna Wizik. We had Julio on our live show this week, so definitely check that out. That was a great conversation about this book. But like we talked about on the show, great issue. We're getting our main character, our kid character, is experimenting and figuring out how to use his powers. At the same time, he is evading the authorities who are trying to take him back to his country. He's working with his aunt here. There's some beautiful emotional moments. But this is also, like I talked about on the show, it's a fun issue to read at the same time as you have these emotional and very deep themes, which is why I keep coming back to this book and really enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it. The emotions in this issue is specifically the phone call with the mom is just absolutely heartbreaking, but also just some beautiful moments as well. Loved how we're kind of seeing the world through Juan's eyes a little bit. And it's not only just like kind of like almost watercolor art style and touching, but also just kind of tear jerking as well. So it's a real combo.
Yeah. I agree. I said this on the main podcast
then
as well.
Don't repeat yourself. Say something else.
Okay. That's really hard. This is sort of like it's like the planet size X-Men for our planet.
Wow.
Great. Let's move on then. Why don't you say what you said on the podcast, Justin?
This uses the way that the X-Men was the metaphor for so many different social issues. This feels like it is taking border crossing and using that, using superpowers to sort of make that tell a new type of story. And it's just a great book. Like, we were so effusive about this book on the main show. So definitely check that out.
Absolutely. Next up, Berserker, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Keanu Reeves and Matt Kent, art by Ron Garney. In this issue, we're continuing to get a flashback about our main character and find out about his past, find out how he became the Berserker that he is in the present. I really like this book a bit. We had Matt Kent on the live show a couple of months ago, I guess, at this point, talking about it. But I like the mythology that they're building up here. It's very interesting. And even if it is geared to eventually have Keanu Reeves star in a movie series, that's fine because I like this comic and Ron Garney's art is awesome.
Yeah,
I agree. It's really cool. The way that they're just giving us a lot of like just horrifying, bloody action, devastating scenes, while also building the emotional backstory of this character as like a fragile boy who is a weapon for his people. And then aging him up as he's sort of immortal, at least as far as we know, and how he is still living that same life in the modern age. Really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's first off, Ron Garney's art is just fantastic. He does amazing battle sequences that are both gross and awe-inspiring. But the kind of like character realizing that, you know, he is this kind of tool that's being used and, you know, having to increase his drugs and stuff like that. So he's just the perfect weapon I'm hoping is going to kind of blow up in all the right ways. But, it's very cool. And we've seen this kind of comic in different people's hands. And right now it says so much that we're enjoying it, even though we've seen so many different iterations of it. The fact that it still feels fresh and cool is very impressive.
Next up, The Silver Coin, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Ed Bryson, art by Michael Walsh. This continues to be a very dark, very bloody anthology horror series about people who find a cursed coin and various things happen to him. In this one, a botched robbery leads to several murders in the woods. Again, very dark, very bloody, very gruesome, but I like this title. I'm having fun reading it. What about you guys?
I'm not having fun reading it because it is fucking gross and creepy in all the right ways. And when the coin gets like taken back to that fucking house, this is a creepy book that I don't look forward to reading, but when I read it, I'm always like, all right, you did good.
I love a story that commits so hard to the darkness. And this does just like the worst things happen. Nothing good happens here, but you can't look away from what's happening in the book. And it's great. We get little bits of details each issue about maybe how the silver coin works and who or what is motivating it. And it's a great, if you want a real dark ride, read this book.
Next up, Catwoman number 32 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Evan Cagle. Here we're getting some flashbacks, kind of, as our main villain interrogates somebody to find out more about Catwoman. It jumps all over in time. This was not my favorite issue of this series so far. Wow. I guess you call it the series, or at least this arc so far, but I still think it's well done. Rem V knows how to write a comic book. I thought this was interesting in terms of Catwoman, but there was something about it that didn't quite draw me in as much as the other issues.
What I like about it is the world building. There's a lot of world building here, and really building out Catwoman as a character that has her own full universe. I feel like so many Catwoman arcs are like, right now she's living in this apartment and she's doing this thing and this is what it is. This arc is about this. And this feels like it's a little bit more of an expansive look, and Ram V does a great job of making it unique and interesting.
Ram V, amazing writer, but I agree a little bit with Zalbs, as much as I don't like to, because this book it's other people talking about Catwoman. We don't get to really see kind of Catwoman doing her thing. It's like the lore of Catwoman, which, as Justin points out, it makes it more about building this world of Catwoman, all these other pieces that are kind of involved in her world, which is interesting. But you would also like to be able to see and get Catwoman in the book. So I can understand where both of you are coming.
Really great art. Yes. Yeah.
And as usual, thank you, Pete, for bridging the divide between me and Justin. I really appreciate that.
He's always been right in between us.
Yes.
not on either extreme.
Seven Secrets, number 9 for Boom Studios, written by Tom Taylor, art by Danielle DiNicolo. In this issue, we're dealing with the ramifications of the reveal of the first secret that eliminated Switzerland, like legitimately just took it off of planet Earth. We find out more about the enemy and how their organization works. We also get a huge reveal at the end there. I continue to love the series and really enjoy the series. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. It's the art's fantastic, unbelievable action. And we're getting some secrets revealed here, which is a lot of fun. I also like this kind of like villain taking the throne moment with all these creepy kind of like multi-eyed bad guys. Yeah, I this continues to intrigue in a way that you think like, okay, Seven Secrets, I kind of understand that, but it keeps getting deeper and deeper, which is very enjoyable, as well as the villain's side of things also getting more complex. So overall, it's a pretty amazing book with all the things going around and all the things that they're juggling, and they're doing it in a way that is still moving the story forward in a way that it is intriguing for the reader, and they're like collecting information as they go. I've been really impressed with this package.
Written by Tom Taylor, not a manga writer, this book feels so much like a manga in a way that I think really shows that he's been studying that world. I feel like this book is just a little bit coy with information. I would like to have some more information about what's happening in general, but it's a book called Seven Secrets, so I guess we got to wait for more.
Yeah, I was going to say you should read Seven Confessions is another title that Tom Taylor's been writing, which really tells you a lot of information.
Yeah. And right originally he started with Taxi Cab Confessions and then moved on.
Yes, exactly. Pete's favorite, still your favorite television show, right?
Yeah, but that was all real.
Yeah, Taxi Cab Confessions.
Yes, that was all real. That wasn't scripted.
Alex, how is your real sex podcast going? Where you just watch down all the real sex episodes and
it's great. It's going really well. Nobody listens to it, but it's going very nicely. Alien number 4 from Marvel Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Salvador Larraca. In this issue, we are continuing our assault on the space station that has been taken over by xenomorphs. Our main character is looking for something to take back to Weyland-Yutani, but also his son at the same time. Things go, of course, horribly wrong in this issue. This really got me, this issue. Like, we've talking about, Philip Kennedy Johnson has been really drilling into the idea of fathers and sons in a lot of his work. And
yeah,
it really
right.
hits on all cylinders here right now in a very emotional way. Justin, what did you think about this one?
PKJ, really doing it. This book had a great twist in it that I thought was hard. I did not see it coming, and it was a tough look. I like where it's going. It's a like a lot of the Alien franchise. It's bad situations only getting worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, PKJ is killing it on this book, but also the art is just phenomenal. Love the aliens.
SL?
Yeah, I love the alien designs. Also, big, cool alien reveal at the end. Like, we've seen a lot of different cool aliens, but that last page, I was like, oh, shit, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen a lot of different alien things, so the fact that we're still seeing good stuff is really impressive, because it could get very tired very easy. So it's impressive that they're still finding kind of new corners to explore or things we're familiar with, but doing it in a different way. So hat off to this
project. Yeah, it's like if you're spicing things up with some sort of Wolverine play or something like that sexually.
Well, exactly.
That's the sort of thing.
So, just a heads up, if you're thinking about doing a bit that involves sex, just stop. Okay, when people look at your face, they don't want to hear you talking about sex, man. I'm sorry.
Wow. Not necessary. What I thought at the end of this issue was like, wow, that is a horny alien. Anybody
people
else?
People look at my face and they don't want to think about sex. Jesus Christ, Pete.
Pete's
we've
just
been doing
mad.
The show for 15 years, and that's easily the rudest thing you've ever said to me.
It's not nice.
Because I'll tell you what.
Not nice.
The prostitutes that I pay to have sex with me love my face.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
For only $20 more, they tell me.
Wow. That's got to be true. It's got to be true.
Radiant Black, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins, art by Eduardo Ferragato and Marcelo Costa. This book is so good. We've talked about it with every issue, but to spoil the twist for the last issue, the main character who got these gravity powers, these very like invincible Power Rangers-esque type powers, almost died, and his best friend stole his powers from him. So you'd expect, okay, he gets better this issue, and then he gets the powers back. That's exactly not what happens. We're now following the asshole friend who has these powers and gets involved with other people who have these powers as well. There's some big twists here. This is great. This is like legit leaving it all on the table by issue 5, and I love it.
It keeps you guessing, this book, in a way that I just didn't expect from the way the premise was set up, as well as, was it the third issue where it was like this deep dive into the first main character's like writing career?
Yeah.
And then suddenly we're in this part where like that character's just off the board, and now the world has expanded into like a Power Rangers situation.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, there's a lot of like very interesting drama, then with over the top fun action that's very kind of like, you know, like just kind of like this fuck you driven kind of like, how dare you? He's in a coma, you know. It's just unexpected, and it's the art's fantastic. It's a very creative thing with a title that doesn't kind of make sense, but works. So I've been really pleasantly surprised with this book.
Next up, The Many Deaths of Layla Starr, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Ram V, art by Felipe Andrade. As usual with this book, we jump forward several years to catch up with Layla Starr, a.k.a. Death, who keeps being reincarnated year after year with big jumps in between. And she is ostensibly trying to stop the boy who is going to bring about eternal life. But in this issue, once again, spoiler, they meet up, but we get everything through the perspective of a cigarette, which is great. This whole title is great, from the writing to the art to absolutely everything. I am loving reading this book.
I agree. I love this book. It's so, it reminds me of, what was the book with
Wolverine?
Yes, that's it. He, like, with the claws, the claw guy. The very sexual claw guy. Yeah, yeah, right. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
I'm the best that I there is at what I do, and what I do is watch islands fuck.
Yeah.
What book are you trying to think of?
I'm thinking of, Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba.
Yeah, yeah, Day Tripper.
Day Tripper.
What were you doing? Were you looking behind you, Pete?
Yeah, I have the book behind me. Oh, I was trying to remember it as Justin.
I thought you were shouting at somebody who wandered into your room.
Hey, knock it off. I'm talking to my friends.
Fabio Moon! Huh? Come on!
It reminds me of Day Tripper, both in the art style and in sort of the type of storytelling here, getting into death and sort of how our destinies come together, and just it's just a great, truly on that level of storytelling. I love this book.
I agree. This is a very creative, cool book. The art is just unbelievably beautiful in the perspective. If you were trying to quit smoking, though, I definitely don't recommend reading this book. It would be a huge trigger and makes you want to smoke a cigarette. But other than that, it's just a real creative kind of masterpiece as far as like perspective goes and the time that kind of goes by as that kind of cigarette goes down. Very, very cool and really just unbelievable art.
Next up, Stillwater number 8 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Ramon K. Perez. In this issue, we're getting a flashback to find out how our sheriff came to the town where nobody dies.
Sheriff.
What?
Your sheriff?
Sheriff. Did I say sheriff?
Marriage. Marriage.
What is going on with you, Pete?
I don't know.
Jesus Christ.
You guys are, it's everything's great. Everything's great.
Justin, what did you think about this book?
This book also continues to impress me. Like I love the art. Ramon Perez's art, I think, is so good. And we get sort of this story of a quote unquote regular person taking her shot, sort of up against the wall, and finding her way into the town of Stillwater. And it's good. It really starts. It really pushes this story forward, or the idea of all of these characters living in this town where they have nothing to lose. They are just willing to do anything to preserve this sort of world they have. And it's good.
Yeah. I mean, what's really interesting about this book for me is the fact of like, okay, we have this premise, and instead of just keep exploring that, we're finding new kind of stories within this world to explore and having these other characters and how they're kind of fighting against it. It's very cool. The art's unbelievable. It's a very, very interesting book.
Next up, Demon Days Mariko, number 1 from Marvel, written by Peach Momoko. This is continuing, as you can probably figure out, the Demon Days storyline that gives a very manga-inflected take on Marvel Comics lore. Here we're focusing on Mariko, Wolverine's girlfriend, as she interacts with a variant of Black Widow. Justin, your face is going wild right now. What's going on?
Just the fact that Mariko came up, Wolverine's girlfriend, very telling, given all the dream stuff we've been talking about. Fantastic art in this book. Yeah. Just really great, beautiful sort
of. Yeah, when you had a sexual dream of Wolverine, Justin, was Mariko the other person?
Here's a crazy thing. Like, I was Wolverine, but I was also Mariko.
Wow.
Like, where I was both.
Dreams
And again, if anyone has any, like, personal version of this that they want to weigh in on.
Yeah, please, like just real definitely life personal version. I had a dream where I was Wolverine, but I was also two islands at the same time. Pete, what about you? You want to chime in with anything?
You're the only one who hasn't weighed in here, Peter.
Yeah, you want to chime in with?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, the art is absolutely both spooky and unbelievably breathtaking.
Creepy and kooky.
The two floating babies that are holding hands and being extra creepy freaked me the fuck out and then made me have a flashback to Riverdale floating babies. Anytime you put like creepy kids in a kind of like a horror tale, it really fucks my shit up.
It gets you.
It's really fun to see these kind of different interpretations of these characters in a manga kind of way. Just the art alone is worth picking up this book. Just really cool, fun to see manga versions of the characters we know.
Peach Momoka's art is great. That is the thing that I'm really taking away from the book. I just really like looking at it. I like the story as well, but it's just absolutely gorgeous. Next up, Nightwing number 81 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Bruno Redondo. I love this book as well. I know I've been saying I've been loving a lot of books, but like we talked about with previous issues, I have not particularly been into Nightwing, other than maybe the Agent of Spiral run that Tom King and Tim Seeley did back in the day a couple of years ago, which was super fun. But this is so good. Like, the whole cast that they're building out, the art by Bruno Redondo is gorgeous. The layouts are amazing. I am very into this book. And like we talked about in the last issue, a little less than this one, but it still feels like DC's answer, belated answer to Hawkeye in a certain way. And I think it's absolutely working.
Specifically with the art style, I feel like. It's not like we're getting the same tone or like sort of character moves. I feel like the Hawkeyeification of storytelling was something we talked about a lot, where it was like, look, here's Scott Lang Ant-Man, and he's like fucks up and tries to figure it out. Like, Nightwing is still Nightwing here, and he's still doing his business, but I do love the way the art style is sort of in that Hawkeye world. And I've been a longstanding Nightwing fan across the board, and so this is it's great to see the character resurgent here.
Yeah, I mean, this is great, but Bitewing is really what takes the cake in this issue. Really fun. Also, twist ending great, but yeah, art's fantastic.
Great twist.
Such a good twist. I loved it. I did not see it coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I yelled twist. But
yes, which is what you do when stuff happens. You yell what's happening when it happens.
Twist. But yeah, I think art's fantastic. This has been a really great book, continues to be so. I'm not a huge Nightwing fan, but I'm having a great time with this book.
I like at the end of the book when you yell, expected ending. I saw it coming.
Next up, Time Before Time, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Declan Shalvey.
Wait, you mean Time After Time?
Time Before Time.
Oh, okay.
That's the name
of
the book.
Time After Time.
By Declan Shalvey and Rory McConville, art by Joe Palmer. In this issue, two of our characters are stranded somewhere in time. They don't know exactly where because they broke their time machine. Meanwhile, we're getting flashbacks, flash forwards. Of course, it's a time travel book as we flesh out more of this world and how the time travel works. This is great. I feel like it is very hard to make a original take on time travel, but that's what this feels like this is.
You know what this book reminds me of is like some classic comic storytelling, like the book Zot. That I think, you ever, that's like some old school shit.
But yeah, that's some old school shit right there.
It really feels like, is that by the guy that did Understanding Comics?
Yes.
Or, and
Scott McCloud.
Scott McCloud. It has that the art style I feel like is reminiscent of that. And it feels like it's taking a premise and really like, pointing out in different directions from it in a way that feels both meticulous and sort of like, playing around as the story's going.
Yeah, I'm happy that they were kind of like putting in the dates in there, but it's also very interesting that the like dates are fucked up if the time is fucked up. I think this is very creative. Time travel drives me insane, but this was kind of done in a way that wasn't so annoying. Really love the character design and the art is fantastic.
Next up, Batman Fortnite 0. Number 5 from DC Comics.
Favorite title.
Yeah, baby, let's do it.
Concept by Donald Mustard, written by Christos Gage, art by Christian Deuce.
What was that
So here's the thing. In this issue, we have the Fortnite characters teaming up with Batman, Catwoman, and Deathstroke to try to return to their home universes. This is still pretty good. But it's not as strong as the first three issues.
Like it now because they have to get to the story, the plot.
Yeah, you don't.
Yes. There's a lot of plot here.
Well, there was something about the fact that the first three issues were mostly silent and just told through narration that was so creative and felt so fresh and so different, kept them very focused on the Batman-Catwoman relationship and then eventually on that wild Snake Eyes twist. But now, it feels like a very conventional comic book, and Christos Gage knows how to write a really good comic book, so that's fine. I'm still enjoying reading it, but It's not the same thing.
Oh, man.
I hear you.
I'm so depressed now.
I do think.
I hear you. I understand you. I support you. Go ahead.
That's it. That's all I have to say. But I do think this issue is going to, this was the issue that had to like do the business. And then we're going to get the conclusion next issue that I think will be back to form, like you're thinking about, Alex. Because I do think that's what's set up in the last couple of pages of this. I wanted to ask you guys, would you be the person who ran and jumped into the energy field before it was figured out?
Yeah, that's just dumb. I don't know why you would jump early.
I'd never do that.
I'd throw somebody.
Never jump
first,
into something without knowing.
Yeah, I'd throw somebody in. I'd push them out of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
No. Push them into it.
But I think that I disagree with Zalbin. Like, first off, I know what you're saying.
My face wasn't good for sex or whatever you said.
Yeah, that's true. Anyways, I feel like the.
Well, I guess that makes me Batman because his face also isn't good for sex.
Oh, my God.
Finally, proof that you're Batman.
He doesn't get a full face, Zalbin. Think about it. He only gets this much. Anyways, so like. I hear what you're saying, but I like this issue because of the ending. Like, to me, it was
Batman
all worth
Batman just
it.
Doesn't like deep, narrow spaces because they remind him of the alley where his parents died.
Oh, my God. I don't know
that's
what
a take
you're
we
comparing
need on Twitter,
to
Alex.
That alley, but I don't appreciate it. Anyways,
he
I
just
think
can't
that,
get his hand on those pearls. That keep yeah.
Anyways, I think
Martha!
That you got to give
Why
this.
Why did you say that name?
You got to give this what comic
during sex.
One, okay? Let it have one issue where it kind of like maybe
I don't
it's
have
not
to do fucking anything, man. I host a comic book review podcast.
Uh-oh, okay, Alex is feeling it. Easy, I think Pete, you pushed it over the edge. Alex is he's off.
I don't care. You got one issue.
You've been having such a great time with this comic, and it gives one issue where they're moving stuff around to get to a better.
I'm
ending.
Done. Oh, I'm out.
Pete feels bad. He wants you to enjoy everything.
Yeah, this was a. This is
yeah,
a. Great,
I know. If there's Pete's position
thing.
On this podcast is please just calm down and enjoy things.
Yeah.
Wait, let me just rewind this real quick right here and go back to our discussion about Planet Size X-Men. I just want to review what we talked about there because I don't remember.
Yeah.
I think he basically said, go ahead, be your own dog, man. Let's just live our dreams. That's what I remember his review being.
I feel like it did such a great job of setting up this really cool thing and delivering for the first couple of issues. You got to give it one to let it set some things up. I really love that thing of like as he's disappearing, it's like at least, you know, you have each other. That's such a – especially with Batman and Catwoman right now with their relationship, like – I really think it's a cool setup for more.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the last issue when Catwoman is like, well, since it's now the two of us, do you want to, you know, go downtown? And he's like, I don't do that.
Wow.
Fortnite. Well, last issue, Ultra Mega number 4 from Image Comics by Giant James Herron. In this issue, we're bringing to bear a lot of the things that have been teased in the first couple of issues, where the main character we've been following since issue 2 finally gets the Ultra Mega powers. Things still go so bloody and so wrong here.
Yeah. It's so wild.
Yeah.
This book is wild.
I still liked it. I know that we had some controversy with the first issue, but I really feel like this title has come into its own. The art is insane and gross and over the top. And I like the twists here. What do you guys think?
I agree. I like this book a lot. It is weird. There are fun little jokes throughout, despite the fact that it's this like bloody battle between like strange looking creatures. It is the art is really nice. I mean, I've said this before. It reminds me of the comic book Prophet from a few years ago. Not the Rob Liefeld, but after that, I really like it.
Yeah, I love how bloody and gross this comic is. It's also really funny at moments, as Justin pointed out. The line where the one character is just full out running, going, fucking run! Just so cool, so much fun. It's really weird. It's really gross. I'm not sure if it's all going to pay off, but it's very creative and over the top. And I'm grossed out but enjoying it.
Just to shout out, Brandon Graham is the writer of the Prophet comic. I really like.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the virtual comic book shop.
Sorry for hurting your feelings, Owen.
No, it's fine. Any dreams or real life experiences about Wolverine you want to talk about, Pete?
No, thanks for asking, though.
Okay, great.